all these implements and texts designed by intellects of X to find. Evidently, there's so much that hides. And though the saints above divine in ancient feeding lines, their sentiment is just as hard to pluck from the vine.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Master. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mary Boyle, the Vice President for Communications at Common Cause. Previously, she covered politics and public policy for the Denver and Washington bureaus of the Gazette of Colorado Springs and was a general assignment reporter with the Associated Press in Baltimore and Denver. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mary Boyle.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And Common Cause, along with the Center for International Policy, have just released a new study, Tools of Influence, the Arms Lobby and the Super Committee. And it would seem that what people were worried about when the Super Committee was created in the deal that the White House made with the Republicans over the budget impasse, that it would become a kind of magnet, if you will, for campaign money, because rather than have the lobbyists having to spread their money around on to everybody on the Hill, they would be able to just target these members of the Super Committee. So is that what's happening?
Yes. I mean, there has been, for the most part, the fundraising by members of the Super Committee has continued throughout the period, you know, the three-month period while they are doing this work, unfortunately. There was one Super Committee member, Senator Kerry from Massachusetts, appears to have stepped back from it, but for everyone else, it has continued. And that's very troubling because, every lobbyist in town who wants to get close to the Super Committee is contributing money.
Well, one of the key people, of course, is the Armed Services Committee Chairman Howard Buck McKeon, and he's of course a Californian. I noticed that Paul Krugman in the New York Times recently wrote a very stinging article talking about the hypocrisy of Buck McKeon, in as much as he's warning about cutting defense spending because of the impact on jobs. At the same time, the Republicans on the Hill are not doing anything about restoring jobs. They're blocking attempts on the part of the White House to stimulate the economy by creating jobs. So do you recognize this hypocrisy here? I mean, is it... It does seem pretty blatant that on the one, that defense industry jobs are fine, and they're willing to use the argument about we need jobs to keep defense spending up, mm-hmm. but not for the rest of the economy.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's part of what the defense industry has created with their, ever reliable, generous contributions, not just to the Super Committee, but to many, many members of Congress, as well as a lot of money that they have spent over the years, lobbying. They have made it, so that almost every congressional district or many congressional districts in the country have, defense plants or some sort that are employing people and, makes it very hard for members of Congress to advocate for closing them down.
But it's been so clear for the longest time that the Congress, that the Pentagon don't even know where all their money goes. They've lost billions in Iraq. They have overlaying accounting that with vast holes. Billions get misappropriated or simply lost. So is there any sense that this super committee in trying to do across-the-board cuts is going to actually cut what's not – cut the fat? I mean, isn't there
– Well, I mean, certainly that's the hope. I mean, we fully believe that there is plenty of room to make cuts that are not going to endanger security if the super committee and the White House will, put aside their political interest in cultivating big contributions from defense contractors and act in the national interest instead of the interest of their contributors.
So who's getting the most money then in terms of the Congress, the representatives of both from the House and Senate on the supercommittee that are overseeing these what will be mandatory cuts, right? That's the idea, that the supercommittee is a trigger that will be pulled if the Congress can't come to terms on a budget, which so far they haven't. So it's there's a likely that this mechanism will be employed, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly Congressman McKeon has received over $750,000 from the defense industry just since 2009. And he is the largest recipient of the defense industry in Congress. So he is at the top of the heap.
And anybody else that you would single out?
Sure. We know that Senator Patty Murray has gotten a lot of money, about $250,000. Between 2007 and 2011. She is a top recipient, Senator Baucus. Almost every member of the supercommittee has received defense industry contributions. And this is what the defense industry is so good at, as giving lots of money to many, many, many members of Congress.
So what is the sense, though, in Washington, Mary Boyle, since you're there, and in many ways I'm glad I'm not inside the Beltway. Mm-hmm. I think one has a sort of different perspective, in the sense that you're not caught up in the process. But in the broader sense, isn't it pretty clear that these wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have added billions and billions to the defense industries and to military contractors, and that the United States now spends more than all the rest of the world combined on defense? And it is, I think, fairly unsustainable, isn't it, in given the budget crunch that we're in?
Yeah, certainly. And, I mean, to get to this committee has to trim something like $1.5 trillion, which is obviously a lot of money. And, you know, clearly, as you pointed out, we are constantly seeing, reading about examples of fraud and millions, if not billions of dollars of defense spending that was wasted. And this would seem like a place where they could do some significant cutting.
And in terms of the lobbying, Mary Boyle, again, Vice President for Communications at Common Cause, along with the Center for International Policy, have come up with a new report, Tools of Influence, the Arms Lobby and the Supercommittee. The arms industry have spent $144 million on lobbying, right, in 2010. There are no figures ready for this year, is that?
That's right. That's correct.
But the assumption would be that given the existence of the supercommittee, it might even be bigger this year, right?
Yeah, and I would point out that the industry employs over 1,000 lobbyists, which is about 2 for every member of Congress, which is a lot.
So they're swarming over the hill just by sheer numbers. They've mm-hmm. taken the high ground, right?
Mm-hmm. And they also have a lot of former Capitol Hill staff who now lobby for them. So they know the inside game. They have a lot of the access that they need to get to people.
Well, specifically, there's 682 military contractors employed in this revolving door, right?
That's a
good chunk of the 1,000.
That's right. And, you know, the reason that we did this report is, I mean, to us, this, when you have special interests like the defense industry, this is our example here, who are basically funding the campaigns of all these members of Congress, that it is, you know, very difficult, if not impossible, for members of Congress to be making the kinds of difficult public policy decisions they have to make here in the public's interest. interest when, and as opposed to in their campaign contributors' interest. I mean, we have this system now where the big donors are the ones who, you know, who decisions are being made for. They're not being made, you know, for you and for me. And that's what's got to change.
Well, given that the Super Committee members have received over $1.1 million in donations from weapons contractors in the last two election cycles, the evidence is pretty clear that already the door is revolving right out of the Super Committee. If you've got five former Super Committee staffers now working for the top military contractors, including Boeing, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, and Raytheon, and in all, 22 former staffers of Super Committee members serve as lobbyists for the arms industry. So they've already, I mean, it's a two-way street, right?
It is a two-way street. I mean, they're not only giving the money, but they have hired lobbyists who are former staffers to some of these members of Congress. And that, you know, is also another way of assuring access and influence.
So what is the sense? So when I didn't mean to impugn you in any way, Mary, as a member of the Beltway, what is the sense we've got people around this country starting out occupying Wall Street and now all across the country and around the world for that matter. There are people expressing a kind of outrage that they don't feel that their government represents them. It just feels like we're in an alternative universe here. This is just business as usual for this bloated defense industry, and the Congress people have found an incredible bonanza here. This is like the super committees are what, like the flame that the moths gravitate towards.
That's right. And I mean, the super committee has obviously yet to report out, so we can see what they do, but it's not a heartening sign to look at these numbers and see the fundraising that continued during the very, you know, presumably difficult deliberations that this super committee is making. And there's a lot of obviously speculation about what they are going to come down with and what's going to happen. I can tell you from a Washington perspective, there's been a lot of talk about the secrecy involved in this committee. There are even a lot of members of Congress complaining that they don't know what the super committee is doing. And, you know, given that they are making, they're going to be making very, critical decisions that are going to impact millions of people. It is very troubling that it's kind of been done all behind closed doors.
So when they report out with their cuts, what happens? Because the sword of Damocles that's holding over them, the idea of this mechanism of super committees, is that if they can't come to an agreement, then there are mandatory cuts, right?
That's right.
So they're trying to avoid that. So how do they? What's the expectation then that they'll make less cuts, or they'll? What's the game that's going to be played here?
You know, I think that's a very good question, and that's what a lot of people are asking. I mean, clearly everyone is going to want to avoid across-the-board cuts, but this is an unprecedented committee that has unprecedented powers that has been operating behind closed doors. So I think that really no one knows what's going to happen.
Well, I guess we'll wait and see, but it's our money, right?
It is our money, and
there's less and less of us. There's less and less of it, and there's more and more of us out of work, you know?
That's right. And we're the ones who are going to be living within the limitations of what they pass out. Mm. So a lot of eyes watching this.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Mary Boyle.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Mary Boyle, who's Vice President for Communications at Common Cause. Previously, she covered politics and public policy for the Denver and Washington bureaus of the Gazette of Colorado Springs, and she was a general assignment reporter for the Associated Press in Baltimore and Denver. And Common Cause have just issued a new report, Tools of Influence, the Arms Lobby, and the Super Committee. Let's take a brief station break and we'll be back, joined in the studio by a former Pakistani senator and federal minister.